Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago.
Continued over guns and violence in America. But amid all the talk about background checks, magazine clips, there is one statistic you should know. A huge percentage of the guns out on the street are stolen, and hundreds of thousands of those turn out to be stolen from homes in your neighborhood. ABC Senior Justice Department correspondent Pierre Thomas decided to investigate.
You're looking at a New Mexico Walmart on Christmas Day. Mass thieves stealing rifle after rifle. This is a robbery in progress in Colorado. But these young crooks are not there to steal cash. They're there for the gun. And watch as thieves in South Carolina ram this stolen SUV right through the front door of this gun store. See right there? That's a rifle. Smash and grabs at gun stores happening across the country.
Gun stores are the candy store for criminals.
Nearly 25,000 guns per year are lost or stolen from gun dealers. But it may surprise you that an estimated 230,000 guns annually, roughly 10 times more, are stolen in home burglaries and property crimes. Watch these thieves caught on tape breaking into a California home. Jackpot, they find a gun.
Any burglar that goes in a house and finds guns, their eyes are going to light up, and that's the first thing they're going to take.
Some estimates show nearly half of American adults owning guns, and the crooks know it, breaking into homes for the hot commodity. Stolen guns like these recovered in an ATF sting often flow right into the hands of criminals, including convicted felons, who are prohibited from buying or possessing firearms.
Talk to any criminal, they can find a gun within an hour or two. If a gun is stolen and it's a cheaper price model, you can buy it for $50.
We're getting calls for gunshots in the area.
We saw evidence of the deadly pipeline firsthand during a recent trip to Philadelphia.
Gun arrests are made every single night.
In all, six people shot in a span of only a few hours. Nearly 3,000 people were shot here last year. 3,500 guns recovered, many of them stolen.
The detective ran this particular gun, and mm-hmm. it came back stolen back in 2005.
Really?
So it's been on the street for 7 years now.
With the debate raging, if some guns get harder to buy, authorities say it will be even more important for retailers to fortify their buildings. And to gun owners at home, police say keep your guns out of public view and secure in a safe. Pierre Thomas, ABC News, Washington.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
There is no doubt, guns are too readily available in our country, and it seems like nobody's doing anything about it. People are just being gunned down and killed. You know, I mean, the Republicans don't want to do anything about regulating gun control. They don't even talk about it. And you talk about these debates that the Republicans have. I mean, how many debates have the Republicans have had so far? 8, 9? And not one of those debates, not in one of those debates that the Republicans have had, and it was 17 of them running for president when they first started out, not one talked about gun control. Not one. If you want to go a little further than that, they not only did not talk about gun control, but they didn't even talk about papers here, folks, so bear with me. They didn't even talk about civil rights, gay rights, Social Security, energy, gun control. The list goes on. Women's rights, economy, and back to gun control. I mean, they didn't talk about any policy, any issues facing America. The only thing these clowns have done, and they are clowns, the buffoon bugs, they talked about each other, demonizing each other on national and in some cases international world television. And I guess they think it's okay. But it, you know what? It is so weird and it is so crazy that Donald Trump has gotten this far and this close to becoming president of the United States, and this guy is totally, unequivocally unfit. There is no doubt about it. I mean, America, what is wrong with you? Are you crazy? Are you crazy? This guy is a nut. He's uneducated. He talks at a fourth grade level. He doesn't know much about or anything about foreign policy. He doesn't know about the economy. The only thing that you really hear Donald Trump saying is that I'm going to make America great again. We're going to make America great again. What the hell is that? Does that qualify him for president of the United States? Does that qualify him to be in the White House? Hell no. Trump is a buffoon. He's a loon. He's crazy. He's batty. He's a nut. The world is laughing at the United States because we have become a joke. Dozens and dozens and dozens of people in the United States are saying that they're going to leave and go to Canada if this guy become president of the United States. Hey, I might go along with him. This is crazy. Businesses are going to be upended because this is crazy. America is going to become a ghost town, maybe a ghost country. If Donald Trump becomes president, a lot of people seriously who can afford it, they're going to be leaving the country. And now some people can't even move around a corner unless move out of the country. But this is serious. This is for real. It's not a joke. And it's just awful that, like I've said before, I'd rather see Donald Trump with the nomination, not being president, though, than Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio, because I think they're dangerous. Totally Ted Cruz, because nobody likes him. But they are willing to go with Ted Cruz than with Donald Trump. A lot of the Republicans, the establishment Republicans, they are trying their best to dump Donald Trump. He's an embarrassment to that party. And if he winds up getting the nomination, they're through. And it seems like Donald Trump is headed towards the nomination. And when you're watching the national news, you're finding out the news, the world news, national news, nightly news, when they are coming on the air, the first thing they talk about is Donald Trump. It's always they're talking about the Republicans first, and then they're talking about the Democrats. I can understand that. I really can, because when you have a buffoon, a crazy person, a person who says, I love the uneducated, that's a slap in the face of people everywhere. I love the uneducated. Hell, he's uneducated. But I think he said it. I think he said it that he didn't mean it in a bad way. But there's a lot of people who are running against him and who do not want him to be president. They are taking that one bit, that one statement, and they're using it against him. I've seen attack ads on television that start off with that statement. I love the uneducated. He's talking about people who voted for him and who gave him a win. And the demographics of the people who actually voted for him in those caucuses. Some of them were uneducated. Some of them were educated. a lot of them were uneducated, because you have to be stupid to vote for Trump. You have to be a Looney Tune. But it's just shameful that America has let this man get so close to the White House, and he's seems as though he's going to even get closer. And there is no doubt about it, folks. There, if you think this is a joke, then your head has been in the sand. This is no joke, and this is totally serious. Donald Trump could end up being president of the United States. That sounds bad. That sounds horrible. It's awful, but it is so true. And I just don't understand the people who are putting this idiot, this buffoon, this bully, this liar over the top. And I'm going to say something about the Democrats. I do think that I'm a Bernie Sanders fan, but I see the writing on the wall. Hillary is going to take this. And I'm not that much of a Hillary fan, because I know she's part of Wall Street. I know she's been taking money from unscrupulous places, and she has yet to explain things. I know that she doesn't answer a direct question. I know that her husband has been in president of the United States for 8 years back in the 90s, and she was the first lady. I know all of these things. We were not happy with Clinton. And one of the things I take issue with is that a lot of people feel that Bill Clinton was the first African-American president. I was a fan of Bill Clinton for some reason, but I'm not now. I guess I've grew up and I've learned a lot of things, and I've wind up bashing him more than I am thinking that he was an African-American president. Bill Clinton and these trade policies, I mean, if you think about it, they had negative effect on Americans. I mean, jobs are going overseas under him. He signed these bad trade deals. Even Obama, TPP. You've got Nabisco right now, today, 2016. They are upending. They're going to Mexico. It has to be something with these bad trade policies that America has. And I've talked about this on the show several times. Folks, if you're working every day, you're getting up, you're going to your job, that job you have, you may not have it anymore because of these bad-ass trade deals that these politicians make for us. Jobs going overseas, Mexico, Vietnam, anywhere where there is what? Cheap labor. You're making $20 an hour. They're going to send that same job where you're making $27 an hour overseas, where somebody's going to be doing the exact same work that you have been doing for 50 cents an hour. This is what's happening. And another scary thing is going to be happening pretty soon. Robots are going to be coming to your workplace. Yes, you're answering phones right now, and a few years from now, going to be robots. They are finding every way possibly they can to save money and to take away your job, to take away your union representation. And it's happening. You know, so my thing is, people, we have to stand up against these Republicans. And in some cases, we got to stand up against technology. These things are happening, and they're going to get worse if Donald Trump gets in office, because right now it's the Republicans are just they're just all over themselves. They are trying to figure out a way. They've been ever since Donald Trump been in the race, they didn't think he would get this far. They didn't think he would go this far. I didn't think he would go this far, but he has. And now they're shaking in their boots. They're wondering, how in the hell can they get this guy out? Mitt Romney is speaking against him. The Speaker of the House in Illinois, everybody is speaking against him. No one supports him, but he has a base out there that's going to put him over the top. Marco Rubio, I don't think he's going to go anywhere, even though he's won one state as this show is on tonight. The caucus, I believe, Donald Trump won 7. Hillary Clinton won 7 of the 12 states that they were caucusing in for Super Tuesday, which was yesterday, March 1st, 2016. In case you're podcasting this show and you're listening to it at a later date. Okay, my guest today on this show is Ellen Hughes and Jeff Clayton. Okay, I've got two people on the show this time, pending that they show up. All right. Ellen Hughes is an author. They're both authors. Jeff Clayton is also a musician. So we'll see what happens with that. All right, but folks, get ready for many, many jobs to go overseas. I mean, these companies, corporations are just packing up and going overseas and leaving you unemployed. Like I said, the Nabisco company that has been in Chicago for 100 years, from my understanding and by all the reporting, they will be packing up and going to Mexico. And from my understanding, they have already given out pink slips. And the employees are pissed off because they know that this is because of bad trade deals that presidents have made over the years to cause this. You know what? It seems funny. We hire politicians to make our lives easier, but these same damn politicians find excuses to make the hard choices that hurt us. We don't vote for these assholes to go in there and send our jobs overseas. We don't vote for these assholes to take our unions away. We don't vote for these assholes to turn their backs on us. But they do. They lie. They totally lie. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in, folks. it's my little rant. Okay, we're expecting Ellen Hughes and Jeff Clayton on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Now we'll be back. I'm going to take a little break. Aren't you glad there's no commercials on this radio show? I'm kind of glad. I could be making more money if I had them on the show. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to be having to, you know, my entire show taken up by commercials. You know, I've had people say that they want to put commercials on my show. And I'm still thinking about it because I can use the extra money. And we'll think about it. I'm thinking about it. What do you think? 347-857-1762. I will be right back, folks. Thanks for being with me.
A lot of people I know think of Jehovah's Witnesses as nothing more than the religious people who sometimes knock on your door because they want to talk to you about God. And that's true. That is something they do. But they don't really know anything about Jehovah's Witnesses' beliefs. So let's fix that right now. Jehovah's Witnesses do not accept blood transfusions. Ever. Imagine you're in a car accident and you get taken to the hospital. They need to give you a blood transfusion so you can live. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, you will say no to that. Even worse, they won't allow their children to accept the transfusion. This prohibition has led to reports of Jehovah's Witnesses and their kids dying more times than I can remember. So why is this a rule? Like, where did this even come from? Jewish law forbade eating blood. And the New Testament in Acts chapter 15 verses 28-29 carried that command over into Christianity. By the way, that same passage also tells you must avoid eating meat from animals that were strangled to death. Now, obviously, most Jews will accept blood transfusions because they understand that eating blood and getting a medical blood transfusion to save your life are completely different things. But Jehovah's Witnesses don't feel that way. They are both one and the same, even if it means saving your life. If you commit what the church views as a serious sin, and a group of church elders finds you unrepentant, you will be disfellowshipped. Not just kicked out of the church, but disfellowshipped, which means no one in the church can ever talk to you ever again. By the way, that could include your family. I know former Jehovah's Witnesses who haven't spoken to their parents in years because of this rule. Basically, if you're disfellowshipped, your family could talk to you about non-church-related things, like how their grandkids are doing or something. But that's it. And when those family members are heavily invested in the church, there really isn't much stuff that's non-church-related that they can talk to you about. So once you're in the church, leaving it basically means saying goodbye to your entire life as you knew it. By the way, what are some of the serious sins that could get you disfellowshipped? Getting a blood transfusion, going to another church, using tobacco, homosexual activity, or openly disagreeing with church leadership. Oh, and not believing in God. They believe the world's ending soon, and only they will be saved. The Watchtower Society, which governs the faith, says that Jesus began ruling over earth from heaven in 1914. October 5th or 6th, to be more precise. They believe that Armageddon is happening soon, and that only those who accept Jehovah's Witness teachings will be saved. Of course, they also said all this about 1914, 1925, and 1975. So their track record for predicting the end of the world isn't very good. Oh, and in case you're wondering, there are about 8 million people who are witnesses, and like 7 billion who are not. So, odds are, you're screwed. Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate their birthdays. Why? Well, for one, they think the day of your death is way more important than the day that you were born. So who cares? Also, the Bible only mentions birthdays twice, and both times someone died in the story. So clearly God's sending a sign for us to not celebrate them. Even though dogs are mentioned in the Bible dozens of times, never in a good way, but there's no prohibition in the church on having a pet. Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate other holidays either. They don't celebrate Christmas because that's Jesus' birthday. And like I said, they don't do birthdays. Easter? No, thank you. Eggs and bunnies are just a corruption of Christianity. Thanksgiving? Forget it. It's not like Jesus celebrated Thanksgiving. Arbor Day? No, that's tree worship. And only God deserves to be worshipped. Halloween? Obviously. Basically, there's only one holiday you're allowed to celebrate as a Jehovah's Witness, and it's the date that Jesus died, which is around Good Friday, but it's not actually Good Friday. Jehovah's Witnesses are currently governed by seven dudes. The governing body formulates doctrine for Jehovah's Witnesses around the world. Women are not allowed. They don't have any special qualifications, despite being able to set policy for millions of followers, and they're appointed for life. Jehovah's Witnesses are discouraged from getting a higher education. preaching is supposed to be your true calling, and college would just get in the way of that. So while you might be able to get away with learning a trade, church elders actively discourage you from going to a university. They don't want you to be part of a secular world, and they know how tempting it can be when you're surrounded by people who don't feel that God is watching over them at all times. More importantly, a lot of people who go to college are taught to think critically and examine their beliefs. They take science and philosophy classes, and some of them eventually shed their faith. And that's the risk the church just doesn't want you to take. Jehovah's Witnesses were the original pledge protesters. I feel like I should say something nice about the Witnesses. The first major legal battle with the Pledge of Allegiance involved the Jehovah's Witness family in the 1930s. A little boy said he didn't want to salute the flag because his religion taught him not to bow down or pledge allegiance.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. I'm broadcasting live from Chicago. It's great. It feels good. And we were talking about, before we were took the break, we were talking about Donald Trump. And it seems that the GOP establishment rebels against Donald Trump, of course. Growing number of the party refuse to back him. Nobody wants to back him. They said Trump is a dangerous person. I don't see why. America's crazy. If they're going to, this guy is so close to being president, and that's not a joke. It's frightening. All right. It says here, anti-Trump Republican throws in the towel too late. You know what? I've often heard that if Trump gets the nomination to be the Republican president of the United States, a lot of the Republicans are going to be voting Democrat just to try to keep him out of the White House. That'll be interesting. Ben Carson is dropping out. I think that guy should have dropped out a long time ago. You know, I mean, he's a brain surgeon in need of a brain surgeon. Some of us think anyway. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It is, let's see, 6:29 by my clock. It's about, I don't know, 20 degrees outside. Regardless, it is cold. It is totally cold. All right, we're going to move right along. We're going to move right along onto the show. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's see. All right. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Yeah, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Can you hear me? Are you talking to me? Yes, are you talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you. Oh, you sounding like Robert De Niro. Oh, you're talking to me?
Yeah, you're talking to me.
You're talking to me. Yeah, I'm talking to you. Wow,
George,
welcome to the show.
I don't know if you heard this, but earlier today, did you hear that Donald Trump's real name is Drump? D-R-U-M-P.
What?
And he changed it to Trump. And so now I forget who the group is, but they've already trademarked it, and they're selling T-shirts saying, make him Drump again, make Donald Drump again.
Wow. You know what? I believe it. All kind of stuff is coming out about this guy. Can you believe how close he is to the White House?
It's scary. It's very,
it
be afraid. Be very, very afraid.
And I keep asking myself, America, what's wrong with you? Are you nuts? Yes. All right, Ellen Hughes, welcome to the show. And we're going to be talking about your latest book, Be a Smart Client.
Right. Thank you, George. Now, you want me to call you George or Your Highness or what?
Oh, please, just call me George. You know, I mean, no,
okay,
no.
George. Well, yes,
right.
This is my latest book, is Be a Smart Client.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, you want me to just start talking?
Yeah, I mean, it's your book.
I didn't
book.
Know if you were going to ask me questions or what. Okay, you just jump in any time you want to, okay?
I'll ask you a few, but first, tell us about your book.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question first. Have you ever had to hire an attorney?
Yes.
For anything? Well, and you know, and I don't want to get personal, but when you hired the attorney, what were you looking for? Like if you had to sign a business contract, if you had to have a contract written up for your business, what were you looking for? You were looking to get everything you wanted in that contract. You wanted the contract done in a good amount of time, in as short amount of time as possible, and within a reasonable fee, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, so you as a client, and this is where Be a Smart Client comes into play, you as a client, you need to dictate to the attorney what you want. I have been a paralegal for 20 years, over 20 years, in fact, and I have worked in all sizes of law firms, sole practitioners, and huge law firms that do work for corporations. And the main difference I notice between the large corporation clients and the small individual clients were the corporations always dictated to their legal counsel guidelines that they had to follow.
Of course.
Whereas individuals will just, you know, give them carte blanche. They'll let them do anything because, and I know this from seeing clients time and time again, a lot of people are intimidated by attorneys. And my book helps.
You know what? I used to be intimidated by attorneys. I used to think these guys were some of the smartest people in the world. I'm not kidding. In my youth, I wanted to be a lawyer.
Right.
What
changed your mind? Why aren't you intimidated anymore?
Because I don't think they're as smart as I thought they were.
Well, is it because you've been around them? You've had to deal with them, probably.
I had to deal with them. I did a lot of research on them. I wanted to be a lawyer one time. There is no doubt about it because I thought they were the smartest people in the world, and I found out they were not the smartest people in the world. And, I mean, there's all sorts of attorneys out here. I'm pretty sure you're probably talking about corporate attorneys.
I'm talking about any kind of attorney, George.
Okay.
I'm talking about across the gamut. I've worked for probably over 200 attorneys because I worked as a temp, and I worked in all these different offices. So I've seen how they work. And there are many, many things that you can tell them that you want them to do as a client, be you just an individual with maybe, say, like a personal injury lawsuit or, you know, your book. Yeah, you know, things like that. It sounded like you were going to say something. It doesn't matter the kind of case it is. Of course, you want the best attorney for your personal needs and your legal needs, but then you also need them to adhere to what you want them to do. And so,
I mean, you're paying them, of course.
You're paying them, but, you know, a lot of people, when the attorney says, okay, we're going to do it this way, a lot of people just sit back and take it, and they don't have to. And that really, honestly, the best way to set the playing field from the very beginning is tell the attorney what you want and how you want, say, billing, communication, and personnel to be handled. And a lot of people don't do that. You know, for instance, you know, sometimes if it's a larger firm, if you're the client, you may get pushed around. You may get, you know, pushed off to different people. And every time you talk to somebody, they have to be brought up to speed on your issue again, on your case.
Yeah, you know, I've been through that kind of thing. It's like some people call it the runaround.
Well, right. And so what you may want to do, and what is a good idea, is to say, you know, to begin with, I want to only talk with you and maybe your paralegal or a legal assistant. I don't want to, I only want to talk to two different people, you and one other person that you designate. And that cuts down on a lot of miscommunication.
Wow. You have a Amazon bestseller, Adventures in Natural Healing. What is that about?
Right. What's that book about? I'm a clinical I'm a trained clinical hypnotherapist, and I also am trained in several other kind of methods of healing, like Tellington touch and emotional freedom technique. A lot of ones. And so that's what the book is about. It's discussing 27 different healing methods that most all of them you can do by yourself, to yourself, and no tools are needed.
Mm-hmm.
And it also discusses the different issues, the different medical issues that you can use it on. Like EFT,
okay.
Emotional Freedom Technique, is really good for PTSD for veterans, you know, for anybody who has PTSD, but especially for veterans, because so many of them have that. I've got quite a few feathers in my cap. I mean, I've been written up in Reader's Digest.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Words Magazine.
You got a lot of things that you do that are diverse from, this is totally different from the Be a Smart Client. You know,
right.
Adventures with Natural Healing. Okay, I'm going to ask you some questions that I see that you.
Sure.
Okay, why did you write this book?
Okay, well, like I said, I've been a paralegal for over 20 years, and then I actually had something happen to me where I ended up being the client instead of, you know, the one
helping
the client.
Yeah, the other way around.
And it was a personal injury case. I was attacked by a dog, and he bit off part of my finger. So it was a really bad situation for that. But what I found was being on the other side of the table and trying to talk to attorneys was a whole different ballgame than actually being in the legal firm. So then I started talking to people. You know how when something happens to you, then you start meeting people who it's happened to also? Because I was getting very, very frustrated with talking to some of these attorneys because they were just, excuse me, but they were jerks. I'd only worked for two personal injury lawyers. Honestly, they're not my cup of tea. But
would you say some
after
of
that
them
happened
are,
to me,
some of them,
huh?
Oh, would you say that some might be intimidating?
Well, yes, and they're bullies. Some of them are very, like, bullies. And I wasn't physically feeling very good. I was on a lot of painkillers and all this kind of stuff. But once I got my wits about me, and then I started talking to other people, or other people started talking to me and telling me about their bad experiences with bad attorneys. And that's when I went, Judith, you know, Ellen, I know how to deal with attorneys. People need to know this information. So when they go to hire an attorney, they don't feel intimidated, and they weed out the bullies. Even they don't even hire them because they weed them out from different questions that I have them ask. And there's a checklist of things that they ask, and there's other things that they can do to make sure they get a good attorney who's going to be working for them and not trying to manipulate them into doing something they don't want, you know, or accept a plea that they don't want.
I think that was the next question I was going to ask you. What are some of the personal preferences to consider before hiring an attorney?
Okay, some of the personal ones are you know, kind of depends on the case. But say it is a personal injury case. You know, those things can go on for a long time. And depending on what kind of case it is, you may have to answer a lot of real personal questions. So are you going to be more comfortable speaking with a man or with a woman, with an older person or with a younger person?
Okay.
What kind of communication do you prefer? If you're a person who likes to only text and you are, you know, you hire an attorney who only wants email, that's going to be a sore spot between you two. And you want to be, you want to have your attorney-client relationship as fluid as possible. because you don't want that to be the center of attention. What the center of attention should be, the outcome, the end result of your case. That's what you're working for. You don't want to have to deal with all the little things, little communication problems or billing problems or personnel problems along the way. You're going through enough stuff already.
So what you're saying is kind of what you're saying is if you're looking for an attorney, make sure you do your homework and shop around for the best attorney for your needs.
Right. There's personal needs and there's legal needs. Now, a lot of people, when they're looking for an attorney, say that they, they're going to have a business contract written up. They want one drawn up. Or, let's say like estate planning. You want a will drawn up. You want some powers of attorney drawn up. So you may ask your neighbor, and they've got a name of a person, and you're like, oh, right, I'll go with them.
Yeah.
But,
you
know, that's one facet of it. But still, are they far away? Is it too far? You have to ask yourself, how far do I want to drive, you know, to go to someone's office? Because how many times am I going to have to be there?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the personal things. Some of the more detailed aspects is, again, like with estate planning, if you're going to have a will drawn up, one of the questions you want to ask them is, how long is it going to take you? Because I had a lady, a peer of mine, and I didn't know that she and her husband were going through this, and they were having a will drawn up. They had two houses besides the one they lived in, and they had already designated who was going to get those houses. However, and so really their wills were pretty simple to draw up. However, it took the attorney a year and a half.
What?
And plus a whole lot of So that's why you want to ask these questions beforehand.
Wow.
And I am not speaking out of turn. This used to be the way it was done. So I don't want your listeners to think, oh, I can't ask that. That's asking for too much. No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone, if an attorney says, well, no, I'm not going to sign that, or no, I'm not going to agree to a detailed invoice every month where it has the timekeeper and the description of the work I did and the time and the cost, if they aren't going to agree to what you want, move on. Mm-hmm. Because, see, I looked this up. You, in Illinois alone, you have 63,211 lawyers in Illinois. And that is one lawyer for every 203 people there. That's more than Wrigley Field holds. So if you find an attorney who won't do what you want, there's plenty of other ones in the sea. And what
That's what I'm thinking, you know. And but you know what? What about some of the responsibilities of the client?
Oh, well, now, and that's a good point. That's a very good point. The client has a lot of things that they can help their case with, because the bottom line, that's what you want. Either your lawsuit, you want more money, you want your contract drawn up on a specific timeline. So people, treat your case like it is worth something. You know, don't go into your lawyer's office, especially the first time after you've already hired one. Dress appropriately, you know. Forget the ragged jeans, forget the ragged T-shirt. You know, don't look like you just rolled out of bed and went in there, because that kind of tells the attorney, I don't really care about my case, so why should you? You know, if
you
the
think,
attorney – oh, go ahead.
I was going to say – I didn't mean to jump in. I was going to say you want the client to look professional when they're about to, you know, to meet their attorney.
As much as possible. Doesn't mean they have to go out and buy a new suit, but just be clean, be – courteous, treat the attorney as you want to be treated yourself. When you go in, you know, you're on time. If you have to find out about parking, call ahead. Don't take your kids. Don't take a pet unless it's a service animal. You know, you'd be amazed at what people do. We had a client show up drunk, like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
You know.
Ellen, what is the biggest benefit that the reader can take away from reading your book?
The biggest benefit is because if they will follow just some simple rules, some simple steps, the outcome of whatever kind of legal matter they have will be better.
Mm-hmm.
They will have a better outcome. And, you know, a lot of times going to an attorney is not a bad thing. Like I said, you want to have a trust drawn up or your will drawn up or business contracts. So the best thing that they can get out of this book, because I've got checklists and there's different charts and graphs, you know, different parts for different types of legal cases. Not everybody's going to need all the information in the book, but everybody needs to read at least the basics. There's basic information on, like, what does the statute of limitations mean?
Of course.
On my website, beasmartclient.com, they can go there, and there are links to all the different states, and they can click on Illinois, and look up any lawyer that they're thinking about hiring, and they can find the attorney registration number, and then they can also find out if the attorney has ever been in trouble. You know, have they ever been disbarred? Have they ever been suspended? You know, you want to know that.
That's vital information. vital information.
People need that.
Yeah, of course. I'm one of them. I guess at certain parts and at certain times in your life, we are going to be in some way having to hire an attorney, you know.
Yes, you do.
This is good information.
I really think this is a reference book that everybody should have. I mean, it's available electronically and in print. So, you know, it's a good thing just to always have handy.
I was going to, that's the next question I was going to ask you. Where was the book available? How could we find it? How could we get it? And what formats? Okay. I was going to ask you that one next.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, like I said, electronically, but let me step back here a minute. So you can get it on Amazon.
What about Kindle?
You can get it on Kindle. You can get it on you can get it in Barnes & Noble. You can get it on my website, beasmartclient.com. And as far as different forms, so Kindle, of course, electronic. I also have it as a PDF that they can download directly onto their computer, and that's on my website. And
That's wonderful.
So that's easy. And plus, there are fillable PDFs, you know, electronic. I also have workbooks for this. So say someone got into a car accident, so there was a personal injury lawsuit that they wanted to start. There is workbook for that. There's also a workbook for estate planning, and that's fillable PDF. They can go to my website, download this, and then they just fill all this stuff in, and it asks all the different details. Like, again, you know, they may not have to fill in, but it's better to have too much than too little. Because you never know what the smoking gun's going to be, right?
Hello. What made you want to spend your life helping other people with this?
That's a interesting. That's a good question. And I'll tell you, the defining moment for me was. I mean, I've always liked to help people, but I'm old. I'm really, really old. So I was around when computers weren't that big, right? You know, internet wasn't that big. And there I had, Corel WordPerfect. I mean, firms actually use WordPerfect still. I myself still love it, but, you know, everybody's got Word. Anyway, the manual for WordPerfect was written by, you know, people who think you have computer chips in your brain. You could not understand it. And there was this lady, Mary Backe Kelly. I mean, I remember that because, like I said, it was a defining moment. And she rewrote the manual so anybody could understand it. That was my defining moment because I thought, why does everything have to be written, you know, for scholars or for people with specific industry jargon, like, you know, attorneys? I mean, you know, legalese.
That's
hard to understand. So that's what I do, George.
I said some of it is.
That's what I do, is I write books. My first book that made it really well. Like I said, it was written up in Reader's Digest, and AP, Associated Press, picked it up and all this. It's because I wrote this book on government auctions, mm-hmm. and because I had found out that all these different government agencies didn't communicate with each other. So if you wanted to go buy something from these government auctions, you had to contact each one. And everybody's wow. detail was different, you know, pickup and payment and blah, blah, blah. So that's when I thought, you know, just start writing manuals that can help people. Write it in plain English so they can understand
plain
it
English, right.
in different industries, in different fields, in different areas that they need to know. And, you know, some people are too scared to, oh, lawyers, I can't deal with them. That's, like I said, you know, like we both said, it's too intimidating. But this manual is for everybody across the board, and it will take away the oppressing field or feeling of, you know, having to deal with the legal system.
And so Ella,
go ahead.
You want to finish or?
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, what specific thing would you like to say to our listeners?
Well, buy my book.
Of course. No doubt about that.
And I guess what I would like to say is, if you're intimidated by something or afraid of something, start learning about it. It takes away the fear. It makes you a better person. It makes you a stronger person. And when you're stronger, then you can go out and help other people. So
of
it
course.
Just makes everybody better. You know,
of
so
course.
You know, start small if you have to, but learn. Keep learning things. Oh, one thing I did want to tell you too, that I did want to say to your listeners is, you know, so I said the different places they can get it, and I see that you're a library buff too. I saw that on your website.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it.
Well, if you go to the library and ask your librarian to get this book in their library.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and
right,
you can go to my website and get the information for it, but, you know, do that and let's get it in every library so everybody has the same information.
Yeah, because I'm also a published writer, and you're right about that. You can always go to your neighborhood library, community library, and ask for the library to carry the book, and they more likely will.
They will. If you ask for it, they will get it.
Yeah. Ellen Hughes on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Ellen, I want to say this. I after the show is done, it's going to be recorded. It's going to be a podcast. It's going to be archived. I would love to send you a link of this show so you can post it on your website or your blog for your fans to listen.
I would appreciate that so much. I think you have my email address, but I think you do.
Yeah, I have.
I'll send it.
I'm looking at it right now. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm looking at it right now, so I do have it. And I want to thank you for being on the show, and I will get that out to you maybe in an hour or so.
Okay. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate it. And I hear you're 20 degrees there, huh?
It's cold.
Well, we were 57 today, but we had so much wind, we felt like the Windy City, and it felt like it was 20 degrees.
Oh, wow. You're welcome to come back on the show at any time, any point. I'm going to try and get that link to you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much, George. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, that was Ellen Hughes on the George Wilder Jr. Show, and we will be right back, folks. Thank you for listening.
say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over that. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And so just as I say we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. What will happen now? We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. Tonight, I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to thank my guest, Ellen Hughes, talking about attorneys and a lot more. I think she was just a bright woman, and I'm going to try and get this link to her. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah. That was Martin Luther King. Not the laugh, but that was but the from my understanding, that was his last speech. And I played it because I wanted to kind of conclude the month of February, which is Black History Month. But, you know, I mean, hey, wow. Martin Luther King, I would play him all year long, regardless of a Black History Month. All right, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live out of Chicago, Illinois. It is cold. I think it's about 20 or 30 degrees. That's cold in Chicago. It's about 7:01 by my computer. It's 7 o'clock on some other things. Okay, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Good evening, George. This is Jeff Clayton from the American Bail Coalition.
Yeah, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
And you're Jeff Clayton?
Yes, sir.
All right, Jeff, I'm looking at your website, man. I mean, this is great. Tell us a little bit more about it. This is Jeff Clayton, folks. You're a musician,
yep.
am I correct? Okay,
no.
And, huh?
No, this is Jeff Clayton from the American Bail Coalition.
Okay, then that's probably one of my staff screw-ups. Go right ahead.
No problem, George. Just here to talk about the case filed against the California Attorney General Kamala Harris, and let your listeners know a little bit about what's going on in the world of bail and release from jail.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, out in California and across the country, there's a group of lawyers who are suing to end financial conditions of bail. And I know in the city of Chicago, you don't have traditional bail agents like we do elsewhere in the country. But this case in particular would say stand for the proposition that no money could be involved in the system, because they say that the current bail system discriminates against poor people, and so therefore, we need to eliminate all monetary conditions of bail.
Okay.
So, I think it's something your listeners should definitely pay attention to, because I think what will happen, particularly in listening to that Dr. King stuff, is really inspiring. But I think the bigger reality in the criminal justice system is what impact will it have on oppressed classes and people who have been discriminated against historically. And I think if you eliminate the ability for somebody to get out of jail and have their friends and family get them out of jail, the result is probably going to be more supervision by the state. And so I think, folks need to be careful what we ask for when we start tinkering with the bail system.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a book? Have you written a book or on this this subject?
No, I probably will someday. These cases all popped up. Eric Holder filed a brief in the first one last February. And so there's been 13, I believe, cases filed. Most have been in the South. Many have settled.
Yeah.
And there's, two out in California, including this one. And there's one that is just about to go up to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals down in Atlanta next month. So it's just kind of an interesting movement in the criminal justice system at this point.
Oh, okay. I mean, this is really something that my listeners need to know, because a lot of people, they really are not into this. They're into things that they shouldn't be into. And I think this is something, this is very, very important. The criminal justice system is very, very important. So how long have you been a part of this?
I've been working, sort of in the court system, and then, when I was a lawyer and had my own firm with bail issues for, probably almost about 10 years, addition to, working on other criminal justice related issues.
Okay. I've had some friends of mine, and even myself, I used to want to, when I was younger, I wanted to grow up to be a lawyer, because I always thought that lawyers were the smartest people in the world. And this is actually true, man. I thought they were the smartest people in the world. But since I've gotten older, I realized that it's what you get out of it. It's who you choose as your attorney, because a lot of attorneys are different. They're working on different cases and different aspects of the law, and you have to choose accordingly.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's not just – who's the smartest people? There's the old saying that.
Yeah, but I mean, I was a kid. What can I say?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, the old saying that genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. I think the law is the same way.
Yeah.
If your lawyer works hard, it doesn't matter if he went to Harvard. It's whether he advocates well for you.
Yeah, yeah. So why did you give up being a lawyer?
I haven't given it up entirely. I just stopped practicing law, largely because I had an opportunity to go work for the Colorado Supreme Court at the time. And, since it's doing government relations is a little bit more interesting, and working on, emerging policy issues, making the law rather than interpreting what it means is more fun.
Okay. So what would you like to say to my audience? What kind of information that you feel that they should know and learn from?
Yeah, I think if they go to our website and click in the In the News section, you can read about all these various lawsuits and what they mean across the country. And, you may see one in the city of Chicago before it's all said and done. And so, I think it's just important to, any time large and quick changes to the criminal justice system are coming, people need to be aware of what the outcomes are going to be. Because that usually doesn't happen.
Why do you think some people just are not aware? Do you think the word is not just getting out, or are they just not really caring?
Well, I think you know, in the bail world, we've had a lot of reality shows. And when people think of bail, that's what they think of. They don't think about the whole part where you get out of jail, right? and in many ways, that's kind of the most important part. It's not chasing people down, you know, when they don't show up. It's you know, and so I think that's part of the problem. And then I think it's just happened quickly. I think, you know, these cases have gone on largely unnoticed, and it's just not a very interesting topic, the criminal justice system in general, and then bail is sort of a microcosm of that.
Okay, let's say if someone goes to your website and they see something that's interesting, how would they react to that? How can they become a part of it? How can they become a part of something to make it right if it's wrong?
Well, I think, you know, your voice can be heard, and if you follow us on the various social media outlets, you know, that's where the conversation's really happening. So I think that's certainly one way, and then, you know, let us know what you think. I mean, let us hear what the public has to say, because, you know, I'm constantly talking to legislators and city council folks about the bail system, and I love to hear testimonials from people on how the system either works or doesn't work and, you know, what we can do to fix it.
Exactly. I was just talking to one of my guests earlier about Donald Trump, and I don't think this guy is really in tune or has the knowledge or capabilities about changing anything in the criminal justice system. What do you think?
Well, he's, you know, I think he's going to learn, if he's elected, he's going to learn a lot of things quick, which is the system is really hard to change. You know, it's just really hard and it takes time. And, you know,
let's
maybe
hope he's
maybe
not elected.
Well, I'm gonna take the fifth on that. I haven't made up my mind yet. So.
Okay. All right.
But anyway, any other questions, or should I let you have a good night there in the cold city of Chicago?
I have listeners to the show. If you have anything that you haven't said already to the listeners of the show, you're free to say it.
No, George, I just wanted to thank you for having me on. And, you know, we're just kind of going throughout the country to let people, you know what's happening and where they can find information on what's going on.
All right. Thanks for being on the show. No problem.
Thanks, George. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. That was Jeff Clayton. We screwed that one up. Okay, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I will be right back.
Welcome back to the Self-Employment Project on YouTube. Today what I want to talk to you about is how to get real high-quality reviews, and lots of them, to your Kindle book. So, before I start in, let me talk about some of the things that a lot of people don't really understand about Kindle book reviews, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. I don't know how many times I have seen people promote ebook review exchanges as the best way to get reviews to your book. And there's some validity in this, because, of course, if you're doing an ebook review swap with some other author who has a book, you know, for sale, and you're both guaranteeing each other a review. Here's the problem. One, you're not getting a real review. Ebook review exchanges almost always swap 5-star reviews regardless of the quality of your book. Now, on the surface, that may sound great, but the problem with it is you're not getting honest feedback. You're not getting organic feedback on your book. And if you do too many of these, it shows. You know, if you've got 55 star reviews and everyone's just praising the heck out of your book, and then you've got 5 or 6 2-star reviews down at the bottom, yeah, your average overall review rating is going to still look pretty high, but the people who are looking at the actual reviews to determine whether or not they want to buy your book are pretty quickly going to determine that you have just gone out and gotten people to give your book a 5-star review, but the people who are organically buying it are giving it a poor review. Now, of course, that's not to say that just because you're using an ebook review exchange, you have a poor book. They have nothing to do with one another. But you don't really know what people think of your book if you're using an exchange to get book reviews. You have no idea what the actual feedback is, because their assumption is that if they give you a 5-star review, you're going to give them a 5-star review in exchange, and everyone gets an awesome-looking set of reviews. Now, the other thing about ebook review exchanges is that, contrary to most people's belief, they are against Amazon's terms of service. Now, they're not as bad as paying for a book review. Obviously, paying for a review is a huge no-no in the eyes of Amazon. But Amazon's terms of service on Kindle clearly stipulate that you cannot offer anything in exchange for a review besides a free copy of your book, and that includes another exchange in a swap for your review. So that is where the ebook review exchange breaks down. And people, you know, there are going to be a lot of people who disagree with me on this as far as the validity of ebook review exchanges, but in my experience, they just don't work that well. You get, you know, feedback that's not reflective of what your book really is. And as I said, if you do it too much, you can get away with it at a low level, but if you're doing it all the time, there's a good chance Amazon's going to figure out that you're swapping reviews, and that puts your account in danger, and you don't want to endanger your income stream. So what's the preferable way to get real reviews? Because clearly you can't rely on people buying your book or downloading it for free who are not being asked for a review to review it. I mean, funny story here. I had a book maybe a month or two ago that I released, and it was in a good subject area. The book was pretty high quality, you know, had a fairly good cover on it, and I'd optimized it well, and I put it out for a free review, and I did a 3-day free, and I did like a 3-day free giveaway. And during that time, I had close to 1,300 downloads on that book. It went way up into Amazon's free ratings and everything. And I didn't get one review. I did not get one review from the 1,300 people who had downloaded that book. Good, bad, indifferent. You know, you can't rely on people to just review your book, unfortunately. So, here is how you can actually get reviews to your book without having to go through this long, complicated process of giving away thousands of books and hoping you get 2 or 3 reviews, or, you know, going to review exchanges and doing something that's way against Amazon's terms of service. Here's what you do. Find another book in the same category as yours.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, I want to thank my two guests on the show today, Ellen Hughes, Jeff Clayton. They were both talking about the legal system, something I know nothing about too much, but it was great. It was a great learning curve. All right, I want to thank them for being on the show. And I want to get back to Donald Trump, if possible. Now, from what I'm hearing and reading, so I don't want people to get me wrong, I'm pretty sure you've heard it, the Republicans are trying to distance themselves away from Trump. They are scared in their boots over Donald Trump. And it's just laughable. The Republicans are exploding, imploding inside. They are imploding. But someone said that Donald Trump is the makings of the Republicans. This has been brewing for a long time. Because as we all know, the Republicans can be total assholes. We got one here in the state of Illinois. And if I can say a few things about Bruce Rauner is wrecking this town. He's using his executive authority to cut fundings from colleges and universities, interrupting what's going on among our young people in Chicago and the state of Illinois. And every time he does something like this to hurt people, because he's saying that we don't have the money, but, you know, because he's cutting money, the General Assembly in Illinois, they're providing money, but he goes and vetoes all these funding measures that can help these schools, and then he goes on television and blames everybody. How could you blame anybody when you're the ones, when you're the one doing the cutting, you're the one that's doing the vetoing? And from my understanding today, the General Assembly overrode some funding, overrode a veto that would have taken away MAP grants and other types of loans away from colleges and universities. And now that they've overrode it, the Senate, it goes to the House next. If the House passes it, then some of these colleges will resume getting their funding. And I'm hearing also, which is a great thing, that they are trying to weaken Governor Rauner's power. Because there is no doubt about it. This guy is a liar. He's a spinner. He cuts. He hurts people. And then he jumps on television to try to say, it's not my fault. It's their fault. Now, and he thinks that we're dumb enough to believe that. Now, there are some March elections going on in Chicago as I speak. There's a lot of people we're going to have to throw out of office because they have been, what, turncoats. And Bruce Rauner is one of the things, one of the goals of Bruce Rauner, and this is a fact, one of the goals of Bruce Rauner in the state of Illinois, which is dominated by Democrats. Okay, what he wants to do and what he may do and try to do is replace all the Democrats in the House of Representatives, replace all the Democrats that are in the Senate, in the Illinois Senate, and replace them with Republicans, his minions. He wants to take over Chicago schools. He wants to take over some of these institutions that he thinks are corrupt and not spending or appropriating money the way he thinks they should be appropriating it. He wants to take – this guy doesn't even have – we're going into the ninth month, if it's not the ninth month, in the state of Illinois without a budget. There's no budget. How in the hell is he going to make other areas of this state better when he can't even get a budget? How do he expect people to believe that he's going to make this state great again using a term of Donald Trump when he can't even get a damn budget? He doesn't even got a budget. But every time he's cutting, every time he's hurting people, every time he's cutting funding and vetoing funding for vital programs and services, he gets on television and he starts ranting, raving, and blaming. Instead of getting together with the Democrats in the General Assembly and starting to govern. Politicians have to realize one thing. They are in office to help the folks out here in the city and in the states. They are here to help people. They're not supposed to be hurting and stepping on people. But somehow they and somehow Bruce Rauner himself, he forgets that he's a public servant. He forgets that he's a governor. in so many ways, Bruce Rauner is trying to say Mike Madigan, John Culloden are stopping him from doing his job. Mike Madigan and John Culloden is stopping him from ruining the state. That's what's going on. But Bruce Rauner, like so many Republican governors, you know, are trying to shift the blame where there's no blame, where they are the blame for everything. Okay? So in the state of Illinois, it is a flux. It is a total flux going on in this state. And the thing about it makes it so bad is that the kids who want a college education, who are going to universities, are being uprooted because of this. And I do hope that the House, the Illinois House, you know, override Browner and, you know, get the funding to these colleges and universities that need them so these kids can finish their education and go on with their careers. All right, you're listening to George Wilder of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago, and I will be right back. Stay with me, people. Thank you so much. Do we have that video? Not the video, but the clip. Yeah, okay.
Thy loving peace.
thank you. Thank you, folks, for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It has been a pleasure. We're just about off the air. I think we have about two more minutes into the show. Again, I want to thank my guests, Helen Hughes and Jeff Clayton, on the George Wilder Jr. Show. They have invited some great, great input and knowledge onto the subjects that they were discussing on the show. Okay? All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and thank you so much, folks, for being here. I will catch you folks tomorrow. Make sure you're right here, 6 o'clock start time, and my guests will be Ken Elliott and Andreas Jones. I'm pretty sure they're going to have a lot to say. All right, bye-bye, everybody. See you tomorrow. System. No.